Amy Goodman, but during host nighttime of Democracy choruses, Now. For more than
or when flying over
years,
another loon's territory, they're singing for all
FM
to hear.
Been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
Whether it's a yodel, wail, or tremolo.
This is Democracy Now!
I can announce a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas.
Celebrations erupted in Gaza and Israel after the announcement that Israel and Hamas had agreed to a six-week ceasefire and hostage deal. But now Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has postponed a cabinet vote to approve the ceasefire. We'll start in Gaza.
We are here happy with this victory because the Palestinian people simply want their freedom. Freedom for the Palestinian people. We don't want anything but freedom and to live with dignity without occupation.
We'll also speak to the Gaza-born Palestinian analyst Mohammed Shahada, former Israeli negotiator Daniel Levy, and journalist Jeremy Scahill. Plus, we look at the confirmation hearing for Pam Bondi, Trump's pick to be attorney general. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A long-awaited ceasefire deal in Gaza is being delayed after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blamed Hamas for a last-minute crisis that's led to the postponement of his cabinet signing off on the deal. Hamas refuted Netanyahu's claims the group had backtracked on any aspects of the draft agreement. The deal, mediated by Qatar, Egypt, and the United States, was announced Wednesday, setting off celebrations throughout Gaza as Palestinians expressed joy, relief, and deep sorrow over the past 15 months of attacks. This is 14-year-old Ahmed Al-Athamna, who was displaced from his home in northern Gaza.
Enough with what happened to us. Enough with martyrs who are gone. Enough. It's enough. It is better to go back to our homes and sit in the rubble. This is better for us. It is easier for us instead of having martyrs every day.
Israel's war on Gaza, which UN experts, legal analysts, and many rights groups have concluded a genocide, has killed nearly 47,000 Palestinians since October 7, 2023, according to official counts. Another 110,000 Palestinians have been wounded, the true toll expected to be far higher. The ceasefire agreement, which is expected to go into effect on Sunday, January 19th, includes in its 42-day first phase, a cessation of attacks on Gaza, a surge of aid into the territory, the return of residents expelled from northern Gaza, and a limited prisoner exchange involving 33 hostages held by Hamas and some 1,000 Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. It also includes the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the most populated areas of Gaza and the opening of Gaza's Rafah crossing with Egypt. The terms of the deal are nearly identical to a ceasefire agreement that was advanced in May of last year by President Biden. Since the deal was announced Wednesday, Reuters reports Israel has killed at least 70 more Palestinians in Gaza, including an overnight strike on Gaza City.
Overnight, they hit a house where 35 martyrs were killed. We urge the mediators who brokered this truce to hurry up making it come into effect. For it to be today is better than making it tomorrow. For it to be at 7 is better than making it at 8, because there are martyrs every hour. We lose homes every hour.
At least 20 people were killed in an Israeli attack on Jabalia earlier today. Many others remain trapped under the rubble. There are also reports more health workers have been killed since the ceasefire was announced, including Dr. Hala Akram Abu Ahmed, who treated patients at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital. We'll have more on the ceasefire after headlines. In Washington, D.C., Pam Bondi, Trump's nominee for attorney general, vowed not to politicize the Justice Department as she faced questioning by the Senate Judiciary Committee Wednesday. But when repeatedly pressed by Democratic senators, Bondi refused to commit to maintaining independence from President Trump and his possible request to prosecute journalists or other perceived threats. She also refused to rule out investigating special counsel Jack Smith or former Congressmember Liz Cheney. Pam Bondi also also avoided directly answering questions about Trump's vow to pardon January 6 defendants and refused to say Trump had definitively lost the 2020 election. We'll have more on Pam Bondi's hearing later in the broadcast with journalist David Dayan. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, Trump's pick for Secretary of State, also faced a confirmation hearing Wednesday, receiving a warm welcome from his fellow senators as he expressed support for NATO, backed Trump's America First approach to foreign policy and diplomacy, and repeatedly warned of threats posed by China, which he called a dangerous near peer adversary.
If we don't change course, we are going to live in a world where much of what matters to us on a daily basis, from our security to our health, will be dependent on whether the Chinese allow us to have it or not. That's an unacceptable outcome.
Activists with Code Pink disrupted Rubio's hearing. As they were removed from the session, protesters yelled, quote, Marco Rubio's sanctions are killing kids in Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela, unquote. They also condemned his staunch support of Israel, shouting out, quote, you can't be a warmonger and a diplomat, unquote. Four other Trump nominees face Senate confirmation hearings Thursday. White House Budget Director nominee Russell Vogt, who indicated plans for major spending cuts, one of the architects of Project 2025. John Ratcliffe for head of the CIA. Sean Duffy, a climate crisis denier for Transportation Secretary. And Chris Wright, Trump's pick for Energy Secretary. Wright is a fracking executive who vowed in his hearing to implement plans to expand fossil fuels by Trump. The climate group Sunrise Movement said 10 activists were arrested as they disrupted Wright's hearing on Wednesday. Protesters held a sign reading, Oil CEO's profit, L.A. burns, unquote. During his hearing, Chris Wright said he stood by past comments linking wildfires and climate change is hype. ExxonMobil has filed a lawsuit against California Attorney General Rob Bonta and environmental activists after they accused the fossil fuel giant of carrying out a decades-long campaign of deception that caused and exacerbated the global plastics pollution crisis. Exxon is the world's largest producer of single-use plastic. In its legal counterattack, the company accuses Bonta of making false statements about its advanced recycling technology. This comes after Bonta and four environmental groups, including the Sierra Club, sued ExxonMobil, alleging the fossil fuel giant spent decades promoting plastics recycling, even though many plastic products proved impossible to recycle at scale. House Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday abruptly removed Ohio Republican Congressmember Mike Turner as chair of the House Intelligence Committee, saying it was time for a fresh start during the new Congress. Turner later told CBS the shakeup came due to, quote, concerns from Mar-a-Lago. Turner's an outspoken military hawk and has advocated for continued U.S. military support for Ukraine. In January of 2021, he broke with his party and voted to certify Joe Biden's presidential victory. President Biden delivered his final Oval Office address Wednesday evening, warning Americans of growing threats to democracy and a, quote, dangerous concentration of power.
Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead.
President Biden did not name Trump or Elon Musk, but warned about a tech industrial complex and an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation. In Ukraine, gunfire echoed over the presidential palace in Kyiv earlier today as Ukrainian air defenses fired on a Russian drone buzzing overhead. The incident came as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held talks with visiting UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who agreed to send further military assistance to Kyiv as he signed a so-called 100-year partnership treaty with Ukraine. Their meeting came a day after Ukraine's military said it had launched its largest attacks yet on Russian soil, prompting retaliatory threats from Moscow. Since November, Ukraine has increasingly been using U.S.-made ATACMS missiles and British Storm Shadow missiles to strike deep inside Russian territory. Meanwhile, the Biden administration Wednesday imposed new sanctions on hundreds of Russian entities and individuals accused of supporting Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The executive order requires Congress to be notified before any of the sanctions can be lifted, a move that legal experts have called Trump-proofing. The UN's human rights chief back growing calls for the U.S. and Europe to lift sanctions on Syria as Syria rebuilds after the ouster of Bashar al-Assad. These sanctions were imposed shortly after the war in Syria broke out in 2011. As he visited Damascus Wednesday, Volker Türk also called for a national reconciliation process and warned outside parties against infringing on Syria's sovereignty.
The Human Rights Office of the United Nations will continue to support inclusive, nationally owned and nationally driven processes. There are still very real threats to Syria's territorial integrity, independence and sovereignty, which must be fully respected and rigorously upheld.
Earlier this week, six EU member states called for the temporary suspension of sanctions on Syrian transport, energy and banking as the bloc assesses a new policy towards Syria following the Assad regime's collapse. And in Haiti, the United Nations warns a surge of violence by armed groups has pushed the number of people displaced from their homes past 1 million. That's more than three times the number of people displaced this time last year. More than half of those uprooted by the violence are children. The UN's Human Rights Office reports that last year, gang violence across Haiti left more than 5,600 people dead. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Celebrations were held in Gaza and Israel Wednesday after the announcement that Israel and Hamas had agreed to a six-week ceasefire and hostage deal. But now Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has postponed a cabinet vote to approve the ceasefire, which is opposed by some far-right members of Netanyahu's government. Netanyahu has said Hamas is demanding last-minute concessions, but Hamas has denied the claim. Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani outlined part of the deal on Wednesday.
Qatar, the Arab Republic of Egypt, and the United States are happy to announce the success of joint mediation efforts in order to reach a deal between the parties of the conflict in the Gaza territory to exchange prisoners and hostages and a return to a prolonged truce that achieves a permanent ceasefire between the two sides, in addition to an agreement for the delivery of large amounts of humanitarian relief and aid to the Palestinian brothers in the Gaza Strip.
President Biden said the deal is based on the ceasefire plan he outlined last May. In recent weeks, the Biden administration worked with representatives from the incoming Trump administration to negotiate the ceasefire deal, which is scheduled to begin on Sunday, the last full day of Biden's presidency. Under the terms of the deal, Hamas would release 33 Israeli hostages over the next 6 weeks, with the first hostages being released on Sunday. In exchange, Israel will release 1,000 Palestinians imprisoned in Israel over the six-week period. The deal also calls for Israel to pull back its troops from populated areas of Gaza and for Israel to allow 600 aid trucks into Gaza a day.
This comes as authorities in Gaza say Israel's killed at least 81 Palestinians over the last 24 hours. The official death toll in Gaza is nearing 47,000. But just last week, the Lancet Medical Journal said the actual toll may be 40% higher. We're joined now by Shruk Ela, an independent journalist and producer in Gaza. Her husband, the journalist Roshdi Siraj, was killed in an Israeli airstrike in October of 2023. He ran Ayn Media, which Ela now heads. In 2024, Ela received the International Press Freedom Award from the Committee to Protect Journalists. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Shruk. If you can start off by talking about the response on the ground to the announced ceasefire, even though the Israeli government has now put off a cabinet vote on it.
Hey, Amy. Hey, everyone. Thank you for having me today. I'm happy to share this with you today over the news of yesterday, of the announcement of the ceasefire. You know, it's just an announcement. It's not officially happening on the ground. The effect of this is going to take place on Sunday. But even though the people here are celebrating, they are happy that there is, you know, a step, a baby step for their healing process, for going forward, like in the future, which is, you know, just all about the uncertainty. So I can tell the feelings here is such a mix of feelings. You can see people smiling and crying at the same time.
We can hear you fine, Shrook. We can hear you.
Okay. Perfect. Sorry, the power went off. So what I was talking that all of the people were celebrating and crying at the same time. This is a moment that all of us, like plus 2 million people, have been waiting for this moment, for this announcement. And yet, we believe it's still, we have like 2-3 days left to be killed in a, and the bloodshed is not stopping since the announcement until this moment, plus 70 people got killed. Massacres are everywhere, especially in the north, the northern part of the Gaza Strip. We were able to hear the bombardment that happened in the north, even in the south and the central part of the Gaza Strip. Some people in the West Bank, they also hear those high explosion, those high explosions in the north. But I can tell you that I. People are happy, and also they are, you know, that mix between heartbreak and relief. So this is exactly what we are leaving, because there's that sense of uncertainty of the future. Nobody knows what the future holds for him or her, especially those who are displaced now and waiting for the implementation of this ceasefire, so they can return to their homes, or what left of their homes in the north. So there is that kind of uncertainty. You cannot guarantee, or you cannot decide what do you want. And it is. I can give it from a personal perspective as well. I'm part of this society. I'm a story as the stories of those of this society as well. So, but at least we are so grateful that we reached this moment, and there is the step forward, and there is a ceasefire, and hopefully it will last more, and it will be really implemented on the ground.
Ashok, could you respond, though, to the fact that the Netanyahu government has now delayed a cabinet vote on the ceasefire? Are you confident that it will still go ahead?
Hello. Like, despite the delays that happens by the Netanyahu's government, I still believe it will be, it will happen. And we are on the track, and like we have seen this before, like it happened. That is because of the pressure of the President Trump, and we, like, it's been almost over 1 year under the presidency of Biden, and not having on the ground to stop this madness. But by expecting the presidency of Trump, this is a real step here that we, all of us, are seeing. And the President Trump, he already put pressure both on both sides, the Israelis and the Palestinians as well. So I believe those delays that Netanyahu is trying as much as he can to get advantage of whatever moment or minute left for him in the government. But yeah, I think we are on the track, and we are going for the implementation of the ceasefire.
Shrook, I want to play an extremely emotional clip. While reporting from Gaza on news of the ceasefire yesterday, the Al Jazeera journalist Anas al-Sharif took off his helmet and vest like you're wearing, that's marked pressed, while he was on air. This is what he said.
ممكن أن نخلع هذه الخوذة ميادة التي أرهقتني طوال هذه الفترة.
Now I can take off this helmet that was weighed on me, and also this vest that has been part of my body throughout this long period.
والذي كان على مدار الوقت يرافقني والآن نعلن هنا.
And now we are announcing from inside Gaza, Gaza City, this news, a ceasefire for the citizens and the whole population of Gaza that has faced a genocidal war, has faced bombings, explosions, and forced displacement.
إلى التهجير وتعرضوا إلى النزوح في هذا الموقف وفي هذا المكان.
In this place where I am standing, I will dedicate this to Ismail Al-Ghul, who would be standing here in my place announcing this news. To pay tribute to our colleague Ismail Al-Ghul, we remember our colleague Rami Al-Rifi. We remember our colleague Samer Abu Dhaka, Hamza Dahdou, and also our precious friend who was always holding the frame, Fadi Al-Wahidi.
Al Jazeera journalist Anas Al-Sharif soon put his press vest and helmet back on. He then posted on X, quote, "An hour ago, I was documenting the joy of the people of Gaza over the news of the ceasefire, but the Israeli occupation, as usual, continues to commit massacres and kill joy in people's hearts," as he dealt with a number of people who had been killed soon after in Gaza. Shruk Ella, as we wrap up, your final thoughts from Gaza in this first period, if this does go through, you're expressing the thoughts of what most people are saying now, that even with the Israeli delay, that it will go through. The first phase, 33 hostages to be released, 3 female hostages on day 1, 4 more on day 7, 26 more over the next 5 weeks. In exchange, Israel will release around 1,000 Palestinians and allow the entry of 600 trucks carrying humanitarian relief into Gaza daily. What this all will mean?
Well, it means that for us, as we are displaced here, like over 1 million people are displaced in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And even those who are living in the north, for example, they are already displaced in other parts because of that, you know, the lots of the evacuation orders that the army issued several times, and they are still issuing this. And they already issued the an evacuation order in the, before the announcement in 2 hours. So it is a moment of realization for all of us. Like we, eventually we are getting more close to that moment to be firstly accepting the reality of that, that there is another war that is just waiting for us after this war because of the, there is a war of uncertainty, there is a war of rebuilding, the war of the people who already left us and the memories that we left as well. So, and you know, like the majority of the people in Gaza are struggling with grief, trauma, and other, you know, other psychological aspects. And I can say that having this step, it will be a real action for us, like to do something. It's been like almost 15 months of being on hold, all everything, like our feelings, our days. Like I can tell, like today, I'm feeling that I'm getting back to the 8th of October. So I, yeah, the genocide started on the 7th of October. We have never seen the 8th of October till the moment of the announcement of this ceasefire. So I can tell that now we are still stick back with 2023, the 7th of October, and we're living now the 8th of the 7th of the October. That means that how time is stopped with those people here because of agony. They are singing in agony and grief over everything, literally everything. What I mean, nobody here has lost nothing. Like if your home is still standing, your beloved ones, friends, whatever, they are still with you. You are not losing your source of income, but yet you lost your hope in humanity. You lost your insecurity as well. You lost that sense of insecurity, and the let me say that the education in terms of the kids who already lost 2 academic years in a row because of the ongoing genocide. So everyone lost something here, and nobody we are celebrating, but it doesn't mean we are celebrating out of joy. We are celebrating out of grief, because eventually we will have that moment to break down, to get that chance to deal with our hardships and our problems that occurred during this genocide.
Shruk Ella, independent journalist in Gaza. In 2024, she received the International Press Freedom Award from the Committee to Protect Journalists. speaking to us from Deir al-Balah. When we come back, we go to the Gaza-born Palestinian analyst Mohammed Shahada, the former Israeli negotiator Daniel Levy, and journalist Jeremy Scahill. Stay with us. موطني موطني الجمال والجلال والسناء والبهاء في رباك في رباك والحياة والنجاة والهناء والرجاء في هواك في هواك هل أراك سالما منعما وغانما مكرما سالما منعما وغانما مكرما هل أراك في علاك تبلغ السماك تبلغ سماك موطني موطني Homeland performed by Mohammed Youssef. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
To talk more about the ceasefire and hostage deal in Gaza, we're joined now by three guests. Mohammed Shahada is a writer and analyst from Gaza. He's chief of communications at Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor. He joins us from Copenhagen. Jeremy Scahill is co-founder of Dropsite News. And Daniel Levy is president of the U.S. Middle East Project and a former Israeli peace negotiator under Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. So, Daniel, I'd like to begin with you. If you could just start by responding to Netanyahu delaying the cabinet vote and what you think the cause of that is, in particular, the pressure on him from right-wing members of his coalition.
Right. So what we're led to believe is that the proximate cause, in other words, the what the media in Israel is being background briefed on, I'm not sure if they're saying it publicly yet, is that this has to do with the lists of prisoners that would need to be let go by Israel, the Palestinian prisoners. There are thousands of Palestinian prisoners often held in detention without trial in Israeli prisons. And this has to do with the names that Hamas is insisting will be on that list. We don't know whether this will torpedo things or not. What we do know, and let's stick with that, is that Netanyahu didn't want to get to this moment. You can listen to the lies of the outgoing administration, of Secretary Blinken. You know, sometimes in a negotiation, it's useful to have some constructive ambiguity. One of the mediators may even have to align with the narrative of one of the parties to give them that victory narrative, even if they haven't got the victory, to get a deal over the line. But there's also a kind of lie which is just a lie, and it undermines things. And we've been told throughout that the problem is Hamas. That's the reason there's no deal. But every Israeli journalist who's been serious, who's covered this, and it's rare to have unanimity there, from left and right, pro and anti Netanyahu, have acknowledged that Netanyahu worked hardest to prevent this deal. And Netanyahu has changed under the pressure of a president who's perceived to be someone who can act like the leader of a superpower, who Netanyahu can't wrap around his little finger like he could with Biden. That's the circumstance in which Netanyahu has found himself being dragged into a deal that threatens his domestic political stability. He wants to continue with this war, and therefore Netanyahu will do everything today. And I imagine if we move forward throughout the period of implementation, and as one tries to get further down the road, he will do everything to torpedo this, hoping that it will be easy. Given narratives that exist in the West, it will be easy to say, look, you see, Hamas are the ones who are to blame. That's the fragility of this thing. That's where Netanyahu is. And that's what we're having to contend with in these very hours.
And explain what the objections are of Bezalel Smotrich as well as Ben-Gvir, and explain what it would mean if one of them left. Smotrich said he will not approve this. And if both of them left, will Netanyahu survive as prime minister?
Okay, let's do the coalition math first, if I may. Smotrich or Ben-Gvir, if one of those leaves, and Ben-Gvir is the one who has, his faction have set this out more clearly, that on its own, if they left the government and even voted against the government, would not bring down the coalition. Together, if they left and voted against the government, that brings down the coalition. They can certainly leave and say that they are leaving because of this deal, but if Netanyahu